Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Cyril Jura Quinn, recording this on a Wednesday as we gear towards getting ready for another night of another doubleheader in terms of the NBA playoffs. We are nearing closer and closer to the conference finals. Some series have already taken shape. Taking shape in terms of what happened last night, and of course, you have tonight. You'll have OKC and OKC looking to regain home court advantage a couple nights ago, looking to go up 3-2 against Dallas, and Boston looking to end their series against the a beat up Cleveland Cavalier team, who will be, of course, without no Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen. First, though, we begin with a Nikolai Jokic just virtual show performance last night. That is the deep dive Joker's revenge. We'll get more into the game later, but I remember about a week ago at this time, Denver's down 2-0. They've been embarrassed. I mean, embarrassed by Minnesota in game two, to a point to where I was like, there's no way that they're going to win this series, because normally you lose the first 2 games at home regarding minus a major injury. That's the signs of a sweep. Not only does Denver get their balance back in terms of what transpired in game three, they come back and take the lead in a series with 3 straight wins. And of course, the number one reason for that, and there were other reasons, and we'll talk about that, but the number one reason for that is Nikola Jokic. Jokic was led to sign last week, because remember, this coincides with the MVP announcement. Y'all, the Joker haters came out in full bloom with the bullshit, not deserving an MVP. How could a 3-time MVP get eliminated in the second round? So on and so on. And that performance last night was basically a fuck you to all y'all. That's what it was. Forget about the idea that he took playing against Rudy Gobert personal. Jokic doesn't give a shit about Rudy Gobert. That's not a rivalry. You think Joker cares about a guy he's dominated for the better part of his career? Like, he doesn't care. Like, he cares about Rudy Gobert. This is not David Robinson and Hakeem Olajuwon. If you remember, when David Robinson won the MVP and Hakeem was told Kenny Smith, hey, that's my MVP, that was personal. This is not that case. This is not the case. This was one man busting another man's ass because he's that much better than him and because no one in the world can guard him. This was a statement to the rest of the world. This was a message to the rest of the basketball world. Listen, he comes off as a very humble, modest, not a big, you know, we see him on a couple commercials, but not a big Instagram, not a big social media guy. Doesn't self-promote, doesn't whine and bitch and moan about not winning MVPs or not about awards, could care less about the All-Star game. He just goes out there and just busts your ass. And that's what he did last night. One of his better playoff performances, I could arguably make a case that it was his best playoff performance. He goes basically 40-13-7 with 0 turnovers. Completely takes over that game in the third quarter and does what he does against Rudy Gobert. I mean, Gobert, he was 8-9 against Gobert. That was a statement. Nah, I didn't say a statement, but that was a message basically telling the media, Gilbert Arenas, whoever, fuck you. I'm the best player in the world. We are, again, favorites to win a championship. So fuck you. That was one of the first fuck you games that we've seen them have since they became champions. Everybody, and I mean everybody, had them done after game two, including myself. You know, before the series, I picked Denver in 7, but I was not confident. I really thought Minnesota could win the series. I really thought that with terms of the matchup. I was high on Minnesota, extremely high on Minnesota, and still am I still am high on Minnesota, not in terms of winning the series, but I think Minnesota is a very good team. And I'll get to them later on in the podcast. But Nikola Jokic basically told, I mean, some of the MVP, some of the shit that was said in terms of the MVP discourse. I mean, give me a break. Like the guy had his team had the best record, was tied for the best record in the conference. They finished they finished second in the conference. The only reason Oklahoma City they lost by a percentage, they lost by a tiebreaker. Both Oklahoma City and Denver won 57 games. Joker played without his second best player, Jamal Murray. Murray missed 23 games, and they still had the same record. So again, if SGA would have got it, I would have had no problem. SGA has been spectacular this year. He's been spectacular in the playoffs. We'll get to him later on. But again, I think there was a guy that, to me, I don't see how you could have a problem with him winning another MVP, considering how dominant that he has been in the playoffs and he just came off a championship and a finals MVP. And now he's about to lead his team back to coming back from 2 games to nothing, losing that. You don't see that often, to coming back from 2 games to nothing when you lose the first 2 games at home. Unless it's an injury, it rarely happens. Rarely. We've seen teams come back from 2 games to nothing without home court advantage, but with home court advantage, coming back from 2 games to nothing with home court advantage, it does not happen that often. Because normally that's a sign of a team that's a sign that you're probably going to get swept, more than likely. He's completely taken over the series. The last 3 games, 33 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, shooting 60% from the field, and 36% from the 3-point line. So that last night was that was him completely just in his bag, completely just taking just a master class of footwork, how to use his body, sensing the moment, knowing when to take over. Again, the third quarter, that game, mind you, Minnesota comes out with like an 11-3 run to take a 2-point lead. And after that, he was like, enough of this shit. Give me the ball and I'm going to work. And he went and he absolutely went to work. 16 points and 4 assists in that decisive third quarter. And the game, really, they were not a threat after the third quarter. Minnesota was not a threat moving further in that game for the rest of that game. So to me, I think Joker took another step up in terms of leadership and in terms of his place amongst the greats in the NBA. Because, it's one thing to win a championship and the finals MVP, but it's another thing to come back, right? You're down, everybody's counting you out. Your team is not as good as it was last year. Murray is not as good as what he was last year in particular. They're not as deep as they were last year. The bench has started to pick it up, but you're talking about Jeff Green and Bruce Brown. Their bench was a lot better last year. They were a better team last year. Denver was a much better team last year than they were this year. They have experience, but they're a much better team last year. And he has picked it up, and he put the team on his back last night, and it's gotten to a point. It's gotten to a point where he's reached a level to where it's like they have Nikola Jokic, and you don't. That's a rarefied air to reach as a you having a player that another team just doesn't have. Nobody in the league has a player like him, period. It might be guys that are other MVP caliber that had other MVP caliber years, but there's only one Joker in this league right now. And he is the best player in the league. He's the most impactful player in the league. And he has turned that team again into the favorites to win a championship. As far as the game goes, listen, I thought the Mike Conley injury really hurt Minnesota. There's no two ways about it. Too much pressure on Anthony Edwards to handle the ball and score. It's like Kenny Smith mentioned it. They have 10 sets of eyes on him. And I thought he was in no man's land at times in terms of when to be being a playmaker and being a scorer. And I thought at times he was too passive, to be perfectly honest with you. He only took 15 shots. That's not enough shots for him. I want him in that 20 to 25 range, to be honest with you. So he goes 5 for 15. I know he went to the line. He did have 9 assists. But they need Anthony Edwards at near at the level that Joker's at. Joker has another gear. Edwards is still only, 22 years old. The last 3 games, he really hasn't played well outside of Sunday's game. Game 3, he was bad. They were just awful as a team. They were bad. Game 4, he played great, kept him in it, only single-handedly basically kept him in it. Last night, he was bad. So as Joker has taken his game to another level, you've seen Edwards kind of fall off these last couple of games, and Minnesota has paid for it. Now, again, the one thing that you have to remember, from a strategic standpoint, I would like to see Minnesota go back to some of the stuff they did in the first 2 games with the coverage on Joker. Like, you can have Gobert on Joker at times, but it was too much last night. Like, he got off 9 shots. That means he was guarding him for too long. Joker was 8 for 9 against Gobert. He was 1 for 6 against Karl-Anthony Towns. Both Towns and Naz Reid have guarded Joker much better than Rudy Gobert in this particular series. If you remember, in the beginning of the series, they were using Gobert as a rover, and had Towns or Naz Reid guarding him, and they would come over. Gobert would come over as a double, to be the second man on the double team, and you saw him block a couple of the lob passes that Joker throws to Aaron Gordon. Saw them block a couple of those passes, especially in game 1. Game 1, Gobert was spectacular. And by the way, Gobert's taking a lot of heat. Like, enough. Like, what are we talking? Joker bust everybody's ass. He gives Wembanyama the business. He gave Bam Adebayo the business in the finals last year. He gave Anthony Davis, as a Laker fan, I've seen that up close and personal the last 2 years. He destroyed Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis can't guard him. Anthony Davis is one of the best defensive players in the league. He can't guard Joker. He gives everybody business. There's no one on the planet Earth that can guard that guy one-on-one, period. It's not, and by the way, it's not the 40 points that killed the Wolves last night. It's the 13 assists. That's what kills you, the passing. Yeah, I've seen Joker had a 53-point playoff game, and I think they lost the game a couple years ago against Phoenix. Coming into last night, they were like 1-4, or maybe even 0-4 when he had scored 40 or more points in the playoffs. There's a reason for that. You really want to make him a scorer. It is the assists that kill you with him. So I would like to see a little less of Gobert guarding him. And some of that, I thought they were kind of predictable with some of their coverages on him, to be perfectly honest with you. But the bottom line is, Anthony Edwards can have 18 points. Like, you need Edwards in that 28 to 35 range, or 30 to 35 range. I mean, over the course of the postseason, he's averaging over 30, but still, despite last night, still averaging like 30 points a game on like 55% shooting. So he's been great. I mean, he's been great in this postseason. As we all know, but I think that, and but the key to this series, putting Joker aside, the thing that changed this entire series was Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon, the last 3 games, 19-6-5, shooting 69% from the field, 71% from the 3-point line, and he can't miss a 3 right now. He has completely changed this series with his energy, his leadership, taking pressure off Jokic and Murray in terms of bringing the ball up. That was a great adjustment by Mike Malone. And they haven't had an answer for Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon is starting to turn – he's starting to turn into like the Andre Iguodala of this of the Nuggets, to be honest with you. He has that veteran guy who wasn't quite a fit on previous teams. I know Iguodala was an all-star with the Sixers. Gordon has never been an all-star and probably never will be. But he is the quintessential perfect glue guy. It's almost disrespectful to even call him a glue guy. He's better than that. He's better than a role player. He is a high, like, you know, he is a, like, a high, like, the highest level of being a role player, to be honest with you. He's a perfect glue guy. Selfless, doesn't care about his stats, does all the dirty work, and he has been spectacular in these past 3 games. He has been, again, Joker's going to be Joker, but he, I know, and Murray had two good games in game three and four. Murray was okay last night. I know he was shot, had 16.7 14. He was okay last night, but games three and four, Murray played. He looked like Jamal Murray. He looked like someone his old self. And by the way, Murray should have been suspended for game three. So you're a Minnesota fan, you want to complain about that. You have every right to complain about that from that standpoint. He absolutely should have been suspended for game three, for sure. But Gordon has, without question, has been their second best player in the series. Michael Porter Jr. was a no-show last night. Was absolute no show last night, but it did not matter. Again, if I look, I don't think this series is going back to Denver. I think that at this point, Minnesota, Denver is in there, is in Minnesota's head at this point, and I think that this is probably a wrap in a game six. I hope it goes seven, but I honestly don't think that it's going back to Denver for game seven. As far as the Knicks goes, look. You can say what you want about him as a head coach. Burns out his players, so on and so on. Tom Thibodeau is coaching, has coached his ass off, not only in this during this season, but during the playoffs. He is missing four rotational players. Okay. People forget about the Julius Randle injury. Like Julius Randle, yeah, I know it's been, I know he's been out, spent the for the majority of the season, especially in the second half, but that guy was a 24-10 guy, a 24-9-5 guy. He was an all-star. We've seen Julius Randle be all NBA, okay, before. So big. That's a he's the second best player offensively for sure. That guy, like that was a that's a big loss. And Bogdan, you lose him, you lose Bogdanovic, you lose Mitchell Robinson, then you lose Anunoby. Those are four rotational players. The Knicks cannot go more than seven deep. They can't go more than seven deep. If you looked at the beginning of the playoffs, they were going eight deep. There were a couple of games where the Knicks went nine deep when all those guys were healthy. He can only play seven players unless it's a blowout. That's it. So for them to come out last night and play the way they did, come I thought the Knicks were dead after game four. I thought they were dead. I thought that Indiana would win this game and probably wrap it up in six. They had no legs on Sunday, and they bounced back, come back basically 36 hours later and played, you know, one of their better games of the playoffs and absolutely just completely just overwhelm Indiana. Rick Brunson, another 40-point game. You see Hartenstein, who just destroyed Indiana on the boards. They just were more physical than Indiana. They played harder than Indiana, and they're going to win this series. All they had to do was get it to game seven. That's all you had. That's all the Knicks had to do was get it to a game seven. I felt get to a position where it was a game seven. Now, can Indiana win game six? Sure. Would I be surprised? No. But they're not winning game seven in New York. It's not happening. There's no chance if they get to a game seven, which is, you know, which can happen. Indiana is great in that building. They're gonna have to get Haliburton's gonna have to wake up. From his slumber from last night, though he only took like I think he only took nine shots. Like that can't happen. He has to come out aggressive right away. Funny thing about that game last night is I thought the New York crowd was bad in the first part in the first quarter. I thought the crowd was not the energy just wasn't there. And it wasn't until the Knicks, you know, turned it on in the second quarter where things started getting lit. I thought the energy in the crowd wasn't that great, to be honest with you, in the first quarter, but that certainly changed over the course of the game. The Knicks just completely overwhelmed the Pacers with their physicality. And listen, the Knicks are tough. They are the tough. They might be the toughest team remaining in the playoffs, mentally, physically. The thing that you have to about Thibodeau is you have to give him credit for is the mental resolve of this team. He will not allow them to make any excuses about the injuries. And you see it during these press conferences where the reporters will say, well, how do you combat dead legs? And Thibodeau's not trying to hear any of that shit. We got to play what we have to play with. We'll make the adjustments, so on. And so he gives some of that coaching speak that you hear in every post-game press conference. But he can't sit up there, like, he can't sit up there and make excuses for the injuries. It's just not, like, you can't do it. He hasn't made any excuses, period. He can't, he's not going to allow his team to make excuses. And they play like it. They don't play, they play like a team that does not make excuses. Like, we'll go out here and play with three players if we had to. That's the mentality you have to have at the playoff, at playoff time anyway. As far as the minutes goes, fuck that. I want my best players playing the most minutes at this point. These guys are all, and most of these guys are in their 20s. Keep that in mind. Jason Hart is like what, 27, 20, 28, 29? Brunson's 27. DiVincenzo's 26, 27. They're young. So yeah, I want them playing heavy, heavy minutes in the postseason. And again, hopefully they can get Anunoby back before they get to the conference finals, because I really believe the way Boston's looked, I'm telling you right now, I really believe with a healthy Anunoby that they could take out Boston, that they could possibly, they could push, really push Boston. They have not been impressed with Boston at all in the postseason, at all. So give Tibbs credit. That team was that, again, I thought that they possibly were done from a standpoint of fatigue, the injuries finally caught up with them, legs, the whole bit. Now, that team is mentally, they're mentally tough, and they're going to end up going to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 24 years. As far as tonight's games go, I thought Dallas blew their chance in game four to win the series. excuse me, Oklahoma City was not playing well for the better part of three quarters. Give Oklahoma City a ton of credit for doing what they had to do in the fourth quarter. SGA has been by far the best player in the series. He's completely outplayed Luka by a mile. Matter of fact, I think in terms of consistency, PJ Washington probably has been Dallas's best player. And on 20, he's averaging 22, 8, 49, 51 from in terms of his splits. But you're not winning a series in the playoffs if PJ Washington is your best player. PJ Washington has played great, as well as any role player that I've seen in the last 4 or 5 years play in a series. He's been that good. But you're not winning a series if he's your best player. So again, I think Dallas is, I think this, I could see this going to seven, but I don't think Dallas wins a game seven in OKC. Give OKC a lot of credit. Holmgren was great in that game four, especially down the stretch, made the big free throws, played well defensively, gave SGA enough help as Oklahoma City was able to just get by Dallas in that game four. And again, a game that Dallas easily could have, Dallas probably should have won. You're up 14 that game. You're at home. You got all the momentum. But Luka's struggling right now physically. And I listen, Luka's on what, 25? Like, again, he's too young to be struggling physically without any major injuries. He's too young. That's this thing about Luka that we know he's a trend. He knows he's a generational talent. I would, you could build your team. I think he could be the best player on a championship team without question. But we, I don't want to be, we shouldn't be talking about Luka being banged up at the age of 25. Sorry. Like, he looks like an old man out there. Everything hurts and so on and so on. No, dude, you're not Embiid. Embiid is what, 30, but has the body probably of a 38-year-old. No, you're 25. Like, we shouldn't be talking about injuries at this stage in his career. And that's the next level for him in terms of conditioning. And he should be wearing other people out at this point, at this stage in his career, period. Like, we're not talking about this with an SGA. We're not talking about this with an Anthony Edwards, with guys who are extremely young. We're not talking about this injuries with Jason Tatum. Okay. You're in your 25, 26, 27 years old. You're supposed to be talking about your injuries if you're a superstar player, period, point blank. So, I think Oklahoma City wins tonight. Dallas probably wins game six, and Oklahoma City will wrap it up out for like game seven. As far as Boston Cleveland goes, it's just, if there was a series that I didn't give a shit about, but I do give a shit about someone, it would be this series. When Donovan Mitchell goes out, then that took all the juice out this series. And even with that, Boston was extremely unimpressive in game four, a game that should have been, they should have won by 30 points. They allowed Cleveland to hang in that game again. Cleveland is playing essentially without his best two players in Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen, period. So they're, are two of their three best players. You want to say Mobley has been played well during the postseason, so you want to say Mobley's their second best player. That's fine. but at worst, two of their three best players. I again, Boston is going to meet his comeuppance. Boston's not winning a championship this year, so it's either going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. But this, like, they just don't have the mentality of a championship team. It's not even about the talent; they don't have the mindset. And I don't know if that's if it's a coaching organization. If they get knocked out in the Eastern Conference Finals, people will blame Mazzulla. Fine. But this, to me, this is a Brad Stevens. This is an organizational thing in terms of the mentality. I don't like it. The style of play with all the threes, I don't like it with them. I still, again, I just don't like this team's mindset at all. And I don't want to hear from Jason Tatum after, you know, hey, we don't blow everybody out and I guess we're supposed to do this, that. We didn't win any awards. And no, man, no one wants to hear this. This team should be better, period, point blank. Even without Porzingis, they should be better. They should be rocking these teams in the Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference is bad. Think about the players that are out of the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, right? Giannis is out. Embiid is out. And Jimmy Butler's out. Think about that for a second. Those have been the three definitive players in the Eastern Conference over the last 5 years, regular season playoffs. Giannis, Butler, Embiid. With Embiid more so in the regular season than playoffs. But those guys are out. So, you know, you got a banged up Knicks team left. You got a Cleveland team with their star players hurt now. I mean, You can't have an easier path than Boston. I've never seen a team with an easier path than Boston has to the finals. And even with that said, there's still a scenario where I could see them not making it to the finals. It is not inconceivable that Boston is sitting on it 2 weeks from now, sitting at home back in Boston, while we celebrate one of the best stories in the NBA in the last decade with the Knicks going to the finals. It's not out of the realms of possibility. If you watch Boston, you wouldn't believe that you could believe that they could go home. Like, seriously, that's how unimpressive they've been in this postseason. I just don't like how they handled out. They haven't taken care of their business. They haven't in a way that says we're ready to win a championship. They'll win the game, but it's like, okay. Even their wins are a lot left to be desired. So I expect Boston will win tonight based off just their talent, and they'll be waiting for either or probably more likely New York in the Eastern Conference Finals. So as we stand right now, amazing how difference a week changes. Last week, Minnesota were the darlings of the NBA, toast of the league with the way they were playing Anthony Edwards. The next coming, things have kind of settled back into where we thought probably what was expected at the beginning of postseason, and that is the Joker being on top and Denver being probably the team to beat in the rest for these playoffs moving forward. And again, Denver's vulnerable too. Denver is not a dominant Denver team. They weren't dominant. They were, like, last year they dominated the playoffs, but Denver could be taken out. But ultimately, they have the best player, and that probably will be the difference over the course of the rest of this postseason. If I had an all-playoff team so far, I would go Rick was his father, Jalen Brunson, who's been the MVP of the playoffs so far, Anthony Edwards, SGA, Jokic, and Donovan Mitchell. Again, think about the guys who are not on that list. No Kevin Durant, no LeBron James, no Giannis, no Jimmy Butler, no Kawhi Leonard, no Paul George. Like, think about the players who are not on that list right now. And we're not in the conference finals. We're in the conference semi. We're still in the conference semifinals, by the way. So far, those have been, in my opinion, and that's not even just not by this is not by position. These have been the five best players in the playoffs up to this point. Who won the week? Asia Wilson. She gets a signal finally. Long overdue, gets a signature shoe deal from Nike. So congrats to her. She's the best player in the league, two-time champion, MVP, finals MVP. You're going to hate. Some of y'all might hate what I'm about to say. Caitlin Clark is indirectly responsible for this. The momentum that came, or in the discourse that came from all the talk about Caitlin Clark's shoe deal And A.J. Wilson at the time not having one had, you can't tell me it didn't have anything to do with that. That is a coincidence that all of a sudden now A.J. Wilson gets a shoe deal. You can't tell me. You can't tell me otherwise. I won't believe it. So, again, Caitlin Clark, you know, she's going to be the boat that lifts, you know, the boat that lifts all tides, the tide that lifts all boats, so to speak. I know she had a rough opening game with the 10 turnovers and what have you. Again, I'm not going crazy about that. It's the first game of her career. But from a marketability standpoint, from a branding standpoint, from an attention standpoint, she is great for the WNBA. And she's going to put money in a lot of people's pockets, players, owners, et cetera. There's all there is to it. Again, A.J. Wilson should have had a shoe deal long ago. But I can't help but to think that it's not coincidental that when Caitlin Clark enters the league, that now all of a sudden A.J. Wilson has a shoe deal. Sorry. She's indirectly responsible. The number one reason is A.J. Wilson is the best player in the league, and she should have been at a shoe deal. And I guess the question would have been, like, who are her people's managing her? Because her not having a shoe deal was a failure of her, whoever was on her team, as far as from a branding and marketing standpoint. But that, we don't have to worry about that anymore now as she finally gets a signature shoe deal with Nike. Could have put Thibodeau on here. I really could. Tibbs could have been on here in terms of winning the week easily. Just let y'all Knicks fans know who hate him. He easily could have made. He was probably the runner up on this list for this particular award. A couple of real thoughts before I let you go. The aftermath of the Kendrick Drake battle that is now, you know, kind of settled down and clearly is over with a clear winner in Kendrick Lamar, a unanimous winner. And it's gotten worse and worse as the days have went along, have passed on. Kendrick not only won the battle in terms of the records and stuff, he is winning a battle that Drake has been dominating for ever in hip hop, and that's on the charts. Not Like Us debuted at number one on the Billboard charts, number one on streaming. Euphoria debuts at number three. Family Matters was number seven. We've seen, Kendrick's songs actually top Drake songs in Canada, believe it or not. No one likes The Loser. Like, this is all it's always been the case in sports. No one, like, when the people speak, they speak loud and clear. And the people of hip hop spoke. And they spoke loud and clear in terms of this battle. Now comes out, you heard academics either yesterday or a couple of days ago say that Drake, he believes that Drake lied about saying that, you know, he fed Kendrick some false information about the 11-year-old daughter that doesn't exist. That he believed that Drake was lying about that, which we all knew that to be the case. Like I said on a podcast last week, him giving information to Kendrick to use against him would have been the worst strategy in the history of battle rap. So it only has gotten worse for Drake as he has to watch Kendrick's popularity soar to a level that has gone beyond just being a great musician. Has gone, like, Kendrick right now, this is his victory lap. He's on the absolute victory lap. Drake's status as the top guy is in question. That's in question. And we'll see how the summer goes in regards to when these guys release albums. It could be a case that when Kendrick drops, and if that album does numbers, which it will do numbers, or if, especially if it's a classic, to where it will be a changing of the guard as far as who is the top guy in the rap game. Now again, not just from the classic albums, not in terms of just albums, just in terms of just popularity. Because right now, again, Kendrick is kicking Drake's ass at the charts, and it doesn't matter. It's iTunes, Apple iTunes, streaming. He's like not like us broke. The Spotify streaming record for rap artists previously held by Drake. So all these things that Drake has been dominating in terms of chart-wise, numbers-wise, Kendrick has pushed him aside in the last couple of weeks. So not only he lost on Wax, he's losing, like I said, on the charts with and losing a battle that again that he had been winning unquestionably for the last decade, and that's the battle of popularity. Again, I don't hear people talking about Drake. Outside the Drake stance, I don't hear people having a lot of conversations about Drake's songs. The Drake stand, here's what the Drake stand tried to do this past week. Really, so they got to a point to where there was no discussion on who won the battle because that was so obvious that they couldn't even argue that anymore. So here's what they were trying, the angle they were trying to come at. Well, we don't like what Kendrick did as far as the pedophile talk. It's more believable that Kendrick beat his wife than Drake being a pedophile, despite the fact that there's been no history of we've ever heard of Drake, of Kendrick putting his hands on his wife. Kendrick stays basically off Twitter, off, he's not big on social media. He's not big in terms of being at a lot of events. We've seen Drake on the stage with a 17-year-old girl, kiss a 17-year-old girl. We've seen Drake have an association a couple years back with a 14-year-old girl. Not again, no nothing sexual that we know of, but just being associated with a 14-year-old girl looks weird, to say the least. So all around, again, this battle exposed all of Drake's character flaws. All of them. And he's taking his licks, to say the least. And I don't see it get any better. Again, I don't think hits him dropping some summer hits is going to be enough to kind of like wash away this. This is a stain that's going to be that he's going to stick with probably for the rest of 2020, especially if Kendrick drops an album that's well received and that's immediately well received. NFL Netflix. So Netflix has a deal with the NFL that's going to broadcast the Christmas Day games, 2025, 2026, and also this year as well. Listen, I'm going to flesh this out more on a deep dive. I want to, because I'm about to wrap up the program, but the NBA, I think the NBA is going to have to be, you're starting to see a little bit that the NBA is going to have to steal some stuff from the NFL as far as marketing. In terms of keeping up with the NFL, I really think the NBA is going to have to really go out their way because the NFL has already taken they've taken Christmas from from the NBA. Now you have a situation where they've already taken Christmas. Yeah, Christmas is belongs to the NFL, period. And the more and again, the NBA just signed a deal. It's going to sign a deal. It's not official with Amazon Prime. And we're seeing a situation where with these two leagues that streaming is starting to take over, that traditional model of having the games on just a couple of networks is completely done. You're going to have these games spread out over a course of a number of networks. The NFL already going to have the NFL is going to have like what six talking eight, ESPN, ESPN, NBC, CBS, Fox. Amazon Prime, what Amazon Prime, Netflix, leaving out one. Peacock could do a playoff game this year. So I mean, the NFL is going to be spread. They already have YouTube with the DirecTV package that formerly of the NFL ticket. So the NFL is spread out all over the place. And listen, the NBA didn't get become smart, didn't become popular by being dumb. There's a situation where I can see the NBA figuring out different ways to follow that model. I'll dig into it more on the next probably in the next podcast because I want to because it's gonna be I think it's a fascinating conversation to see where the NBA goes And there's some things I think the NBA is going to have to do. And it's going to involve, by the way, it's going to involve some European players that y'all don't really, that y'all act like y'all don't like in terms of promotion. So I'll dig into that more. But again, the NFL right now is still by far and away the hottest sports product, the most valuable sports product in the world. It's just in domestically, domestically and worldwide, whatever. I mean, the NFL just, they can do what they want and the advertisers will pay the money, period. So again, I'll follow up on the next podcast with a look into the how what the NBA can do to kind of compete with this. But again, Netflix has some stuff in the NFL. They had the quarterback thing. They had the quarterback documentary or the following the quarterbacks last year. They're going to do something similar this year with the receivers. There are also some talks with a Jerry Jones, Dallas Cowboys documentary that's coming. So Netflix, smartly, Netflix is dipping into the NFL pool. And again, you cannot go wrong with buying, with getting, acquiring NFL property or acquiring television rights with the NFL or a game. You can't go wrong. The ratings, people at Christmas Day, it doesn't matter what day, people are going to watch. You're going, it started this tour, people are going to watch. And again, the NBA has some, has, and the NBA has a lot of work to do. They have a lot of work to do. And I have some thoughts on that on the next podcast. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Hope you enjoy the rest of your evening. Enjoy the games tonight. I will see you next time. So long. Remember, subscribe, like, dislike, share, Real Deal Podcast at my on my YouTube channel and where all podcasts are available. Enjoy the rest of your evening. So long.